Hello and welcome to the Fun Kids Bookworms podcast. My name is Bex and I love books, and hopefully you do as well. On the way in this episode, I'll be telling you about some brilliant books coming out this month. We can squeeze in a little voice note from Liz Jardine, but first, we're going to be talking to Elle McNichol. Now, she is an amazing author. I love her so much. And her newest book is called Like a Curse. It's the sequel to her last book, Like a Charm. And you may know Elle because her first book, A Kind of Spark, was a pretty big deal. She won the Waterstones Book of the Year Award and the Blue Peter Book Award as well. And it's about to be made into a CBBC show. So Like a Curse, her newest one, is my Fun Kids Book of the Month. And let's find out a little bit more about it, shall we? I am joined right now by, I'm going to say friend of the show, my friend, Elle McNichol. How are you doing?
Oh my gosh, it's amazing to be back. And I say back, but I've never actually been here. This is my first time in the Fun Kids studio.
I know. So when your first book came out, yes, we got to speak. It was the beginning of the pandemic and we got to speak online, but I didn't actually see you. I've since met you at a few book festivals, but this is the first time you've come onto
first
my turf.
First time, and you were my first interview ever.
I know.
I was so nervous.
And look at us now.
Yes.
And look at you now. You've got like a million books on the go, which is very exciting.
It feels that way.
And you've got your brand new book coming out called Like a Curse, which is the sequel to Like a Charm. As you well know, I'm a big fan of yours, Elle, and I love this book very, very much. So this is interesting because you've got Ramya coming back.
Yeah.
And I don't even know where to begin. How would you kind of like pitch this book to listeners who've maybe not read the first one?
Right. Well, that's the tricky thing, is talking about a sequel without spoiling book number one. Well, Ramya is a young witch, I can say. She's an unconventional young witch, but she has a lot of affinity with water. She can see magical creatures other people can't, and she thinks, oh my gosh, this is the best thing in the world. I'm a witch, I'm going to take over the world, I'm going to do great things. And her family says, no, you're going to Loch Ness with your grandmother and your aunt, you're going to learn how to do magic properly, and you're going to stay out of trouble. So everyone's in a big house in Loch Ness and they're not allowed to go anywhere, and Ramya's itching to get out and fight an old enemy from the first book, which again, I'm trying not to spoil. A baddie who is mentioned in the first book has come to Edinburgh and has taken over Edinburgh, and Ramya is not going to sit idly by in Loch Ness and let that happen. So she sneaks out every night with her cousin to try and save Scotland. I think that's...
Yeah, that's great. That'll
without do. Spoiling, there's also something in the water at Loch Ness, which you wouldn't believe. but yeah, there's all kinds of magic going on.
So I was a bit apprehensive when I went into the book, because I was like, oh my goodness, it's been a few months since I read the first one. Will I remember? And will I be able to catch up? But actually,
yeah,
super quickly, I was like back in the story, which was great.
Oh, good.
And also it made me think, like, if you happen to pick up this book maybe in the library or the bookshop and you haven't read the first one, don't worry.
Don't worry at all.
Yeah.
And I know a year is a long time when you're young. I remember when I would finish a book when I was young and turn the last page and it would say, coming next year. And I'd go, well, that's ages away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Forever away. So yeah, don't worry. I do put little refreshers in the first few chapters that will catch everybody up. And if you haven't read the first one, now you can read the whole series, because it's a duology. It's both of them. It's finished after this. So yeah, hopefully people can jump right back in with Ramya Marley and the new characters we have as well.
And there are so many things to love about the book. So Ramya, I think she really develops even more so in her personality, because she realizes that she's very strong and she's great and she's very clever, but also she needs to stop making excuses for herself and kind of believe in herself more as well.
But also Ramya has a very specific thing called main character syndrome, where she believes that she's the only person that can fix problems and she's the only person that can solve mysteries and save the world. And because it's a fantasy story, she thinks, she knows that she's in a story like that. She's got magical powers. She thinks, I am the main character. And it's not really true. She sort of has to learn that other people exist and have things to offer, and that she needs to maybe reflect a bit more on herself. And I think we all go through a phase like that. And she becomes much stronger by the end, and I think much more settled with herself. But has to fight a few monsters to get there.
And it also helps, obviously, with her family to kind of remind her of that, especially her Aunt Opal as well.
Yes, her Aunt Opal. So they're both neurodivergent, which is a shocker with me. it's kind of what I'm known for at this point. But yeah, that's what they are bonded over. They have very similar brains, and Opal's really done it all. She's much more of a accomplished witch. And I think in the beginning, Ramya is a bit frustrated with Opal. She's like, why aren't you picking up a sword and taking down this evil monster? Why aren't you fighting? And Opal is much more of a lover than a fighter. I think she is trying to teach Ramya that revenge is pointless and violence is pointless. And I'm dancing around lots of spoilers.
Oh, I'm with you. I know, because I was interesting interesting because Opal is like, you know, forgiveness is much more important. And that's such a lovely motto. But when you've been blessed with these amazing powers, that's maybe not your first way of solving a problem.
Opal says to Ramia quite early on, she says, the one thing evil cannot stand is forgiveness, which is true. That is really true. But I remember the first time I was told that, I was about Ramia's age, and I was like, shut up. What do you mean they cannot stand for? Of course they can. Like, we have to like take these people down. We have to punish them. Like, I really had that strong justice. I still do sometimes. I think we all do. And Opal's approach is much more like, no, we have to take the higher road. And that's the battle that the two of them have this entire book. They love each other a lot, but they also have completely different ideas on how to fight monsters. So yeah, they're too similar in some ways and then very different in others.
But it's great for Ramia because it means she can learn those lessons.
Whether she wants to or not, she is going.
And you've also got her lovely cousin as well, who just, you know, maybe hasn't got the same magical skills, but has other strong points as well.
Loads of strong points. So Marley is quite an anxious kid, and there's moments in the book where he has real moments of anxiety, where he can't make himself do something. And again, without spoiling it, there's a very interesting thing that they find, and he's very apprehensive about it. And it's really important to me because I think those kids, I know a lot of kids like that when I meet them at book events, and they read my books, and they're so brave, and I don't think they realize how brave they are. And they don't think that they're brave because they're not doing what Rami is doing, which is charging headfirst into a mess. But they're so brave because they're thinking about every conceivable situation, and they're trying to weigh up, you know, which one's less dangerous. And that's what Marley does. He's such a brave kid. He just doesn't get any of the credit. And he's super smart as well. And I love Marley, and he's a very special kind of boy. And I feel like boys in fiction sometimes aren't allowed to be as quiet and as gentle as Marley is. And there's so many great boys like Marley.
Yeah, he's a lovely soul, that character. Yes. I really, really like it. And also, you've got so many magical characters in here as well. Did you have to research them a lot? Because there's like just so many I hadn't even heard of before.
Yeah, and they're Scottish.
Yeah.
Lots of Scottish mythology, which again, I grew up hearing about. You know, we'd see a seal in the harbour and someone would be like, oh, that's a mermaid. That's a Selkie. When there's Selkies in this book, which is a Scottish mermaid. And there are druids and dryads. And yeah, it's all very Celtic-based mythology. And the rules are changed a little bit in order to make stories work. But and there's one big creature that we will meet as well. And there's people from book one. There's the vampire from book one. There's the troll. I know, we're going to talk about that scene. There's the trolls and there's little blue men. I mean, it's just, I love Scottish mythology, and I love the idea of them being sort of humanized and very normal. And I loved putting them in book two as well.
Yeah, the Scottish aspect of it, I think it's something we spoke about for the last book. It's like Edinburgh is another character in itself.
Oh, totally.
Which is so exciting for you, I guess, as well, especially to kind of be able to put your home city in
there. It's my home city, and I do feel that it is a very supernatural place. And in Charm and Curse, the point is that the veil between the natural and the supernatural is very thin, and Ramia can see through it. And Edinburgh very much lends itself to that. A lot of people like to send pictures of themselves with the book in the locations that are mentioned in the book.
Oh, so amazing.
So they'll be in the grass market, and they'll be at the part where the door is in like a charm, and they always say, you know, they usually come from other places, they're not from Edinburgh, and they say, you know, it really does feel like a place where magic could happen. It's very duality in the city is very strong.
Yeah, that old town, it just feels like anything
creepy.
Could happen.
In the daytime, it's lovely. There's like coffee shops, there's cakes, there's bakeries, there's cupcakes, there's tourists, there's people doing silent discos. Like, it's really fun in the day, and then the night comes and everyone goes away, and it's just you in the cobblestone streets, and you suddenly go, this is quite a scary city all of a sudden. It's really a different place.
Yeah.
So yeah, the books definitely take advantage of that.
It's, as you know, I really enjoyed it, but I've got to say, Rami is a very different character to Cora and Addy as well.
Yeah.
And do you miss those girls?
Of course I miss them. They're much easier to deal with. Rami is very difficult. But I'm really proud of her because she's not like Cora and Addy. She's very opinionated and pushy and loud. And I want all girls, and all children really, not just girls, but specifically neurodivergent girls, to know that it's great if you're like Addy, if you're a bit more mild-mannered and a bit more quiet, or if you're like Cora and you're a bit more cautious and curious, that's totally fine. But if you're loud and brassy, that's great as well. There's no one way to be, and it's okay to take up space.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's okay to be, you know, have a bit of a fiery temper as long as you don't take it out on other people. So it was important to me that Rami has got a bit of fire, because lots of neurodivergent girls do. And so she is a different kid, but love her a lot.
And so you mentioned this is just a two-part story.
Yes.
So I'm guessing we're not going to see Ramya for a little while, maybe. But do you have something else in the works?
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it.
Oh, it's, no. Come on now.
It's book number five is... What I can say is, I'm literally about to finish writing it, it's revisiting somewhere we've been before.
Oh, exciting.
So it's a character we've met before, but they haven't been a main character before.
Oh, mate, okay. And this is, oh my goodness, I feel like I'm trying to decipher a riddle here, but I'll try and figure it out. And so previously, you know, your books have had slightly different themes, like obviously we've had fantasy, we had like a sci-fi.
Yeah.
Is this a different theme?
This
or?
Is a contemporary genre.
Okay, so that's all I'll press you for.
Yeah, I think that basically answers the question. But and also, I'll tell, when kids come to see me at events, I tell them anything, so half the country probably knows because I told them. But yeah, it's a character we've met before in a contemporary setting, and this is their story.
Awesome. You've also got quite an exciting project on the go. Can you tell us a bit about it?
So A Kind of Spark, which is the first book I ever spoke to you about, is going to be a television show. It is going to be on BBC iPlayer, CBBC, on the very beginning of April, and I'm so excited. I know lots of readers have been waiting for this. They've been hearing about it for a long time, and it is coming to CBBC, and it's great. I'm so proud of the actors. They've done such an amazing job. We've got all autistic actors playing autistic characters, and some autistic actors playing non-autistic characters, and I think the readers are going to love Lola, Georgia, and Caitlin, who are the three sisters, and I'm so scared and nervous about people seeing this show and being like, that wasn't in the book, or that's not like the book, but I really hope people love it, and it's going to be out very, very soon.
I can't wait to see it. Did you have much input into how it, like the story of it or the casting, or
so,
you know?
I wrote a couple of the episodes, so there's 10 episodes in total. They're all half an hour long, and I had the final say on a few of the casting, the big casting choices.
Right.
I almost crashed the car when Lola's audition was sent to me, who plays Addie, because she was so great.
Wow.
So I think readers are going to love her.
And do we maybe see you in the back of a little shop somewhere?
Well, a Hitchcock cameo, maybe. I don't want to say in case they cut it at the last minute.
Sure, that would be awkward.
I was on set to film a little something, so very eagle-eyed people might spot me in a certain scene.
You just know there's going to be people who've seen you at book festivals just like squinting at the TV, like, where is she?
Pausing the camera. Yeah.
Out of interest, when you go to book festivals and when you go to schools, which book do you get asked about the most?
A Kind of Spark.
Is it that one straight away? Yeah.
In Edinburgh now, it's probably more like Charm and now like a Curse, because it's set in Edinburgh and it's so much about that, but everywhere else it's A Kind of Spark. Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah, that was the first big one, I guess. Yeah. Which is no bad thing to be asked about, I'm sure.
No, and hopefully the TV show will bring more people into the world of Juniper. And hopefully people never stop asking about it, because I don't mind talking about it. It's very sweet.
Like a Curse is out right now.
Yay.
And thank you so much, Elle, for telling us all about it.
No, thank you for having me in the studio.
Oh, thank you so much to Elle McNichol for telling me all about Like a Curse. Next up, we need to check in with Liz Jardine. Now, she's written a brand new book called The Detention Detectives, so I wonder what inspired her.
Hello, my name is Liz Jardine, and I write murder mysteries for 9 to 12-year-olds. The Detention Detectives is published by Puffin, and it's out now. In The Detention Detectives, we follow three 12-year-old misfit investigators, each with their own reasons for wanting to solve the shocking murder of their rather horrible PE teacher. The three investigators are Jono, the new boy, and our narrator. He's mad at his parents for relocating to a new town. Jono thinks that getting involved with the crime is a great way to stick it to the grown-ups. I think he carries out some of the wild strategies I imagined when it happened to me when I was 10. Daniel is a young carer who often uses his love for magic and sci-fi to escape his responsibilities. But when the real world comes crashing in to disrupt his careful routines, he only has one way out, and he'll stop at nothing to get to the truth. Lydia is a nosy school newspaper reporter. She uses the paper to excuse her sometimes dubious methods of uncovering secrets and lies at Hambridge High, because the death of a teacher is a scoop that might just get her on the front page. I wrote a murder mystery because I love reading Golden Age whodunits. The Golden Age was between the World Wars, the 1920s to the 1940s, and some of the greatest crime writers of all time flourished then. I love the page-turning plots, the puzzle of it all, and the fact that even if you didn't work out who the killer was yourself, everything was explained and neatly tied up by the end. In these books, after a period of chaos, order is restored and there is a definite right or wrong, unlike real life, which is often much less simple. Although the Golden Age stories are historical for us now, they were written about the times the author was actually living in, so I thought I'd do the same rather than setting them way back in the past. As I've discovered through all my reading, the best stories don't need to be set in an exotic place or among wealthy or unusual people. They can be about our own time, a familiar place, and people who are just like you and me. The question I asked myself before I started to write was this: how would a normal kid in a normal school today get mixed up in a murder, and how might they go about solving it?
Now, before we go, I've got to remind you, there are so many brilliant books around at the moment, including some brand new ones that you need to check out. For example, Natasha Farrant has a new book called The Rescue of Ravenwood. It's a bit of a climate change story. It's an epic adventure with a call to arms to save the most treasured things on our planet. So Natasha said she wrote the book to educate kids on the climate crisis and corruption in our world as well. Sounds pretty important. The next book is Laura Ellen Anderson's Rainbow Grey, Battle for the Skies. Now, I have read some books in the Rainbow Grey series and really, really love everything that Laura Ellen Anderson writes, so I can't wait for this one. It's got a brilliant tagline as well. It says, "The greater the storm, the brighter the rainbow," which sounds pretty awesome, right? So to defeat Tornadia's dark magic, Ray Grey, with a little help from her friends, has to find the Forever Crystals. Yeah, I'm intrigued as well. So there you go, Rainbow Grey, Battle for the Skies, and The Rescue of Ravenwood are two books to look out for. In the meantime, that's pretty much it from me today. Thank you so much for listening, and if you've enjoyed this, remember to rate, review, subscribe, and follow wherever it is you get your pods from. In the meantime, I hope you're reading a great book. Bye!